people in the future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome. Yes, it is another Monday. You know what that means? It is another Out to Coop Live from Raging Chicken. Yes, it is August 30th, 2021. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. On Out to Coop Live, we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts, right from our own backyard, from across the country. On Fridays, you all know it, Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And check out the Wednesday show with, and sometimes without, Cyril Michaleko. Cyril's a progressive columnist from the Bucks County Courier Times and the Intelligencer, and he joins me a lot of times on Wednesday to drill down into Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and international politics. You can get all our shows by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month at patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're listening to this show on the Podbean app, you can show us some love right now by hitting that little green patron button at the top of the page. And look, you want something else you can do to help out the show? Head on over to our YouTube channel if you're not there already. And smash that subscribe button, like the stream for this show, and hit that notification bell so you'll know every time that we go live. We're also broadcasting live on Riverside.fm. Yes, join us on Riverside.fm, and you can call in during the second half of the show. All right, details for how to do that are down below in the description in our YouTube live stream. You can also join our Discord server. Information for that, again, is in the show notes for this show. Do check it out. For more PA Progressive Talk, tune into the Rick Smith Show's live stream at 9 p.m. Eastern on his YouTube channel, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you get your live streams. Just head on over to therickSmithShow.com to all the programming information and his awesome new show on WBAI out of New York. It's fantastic. And of course, you know I'm going to say it, you got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. The amazing PA women behind stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast rock the house, and they know where the bodies are buried. Spooky, right? Yes, indeed. Make sure you follow them on Twitter at The Night Caucus. That's at The Night Caucus on Twitter. And get their podcast on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're a gamer, or you've got kids who are gamers, or you've got, I don't know, grandparents who's a gamer, I don't know, head on over to The Game Inn. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based, Black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything from retro N64s to the latest consoles, video games for all platforms, collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, you name it. And look, school's back in session. I'm freaking me out a little bit, but school's back in session. And when your kids get A's, they get a discount. So have them do well in school and head on over to The Game Inn. You got a question, looking for something hard to find, shoot them an email at thegameinpa@gmail.com. That's with two N's. Or follow them on Twitter at thegameinn with two N's again on Twitter. Special shout out once again goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at SongADayMan. That's at SongADayMan on Twitter. Well, you know, folks, we've got a good show for you tonight, and I've been looking forward to this one for a while. I've been looking forward to this one in part in the abstract and the concrete. What I mean by that is that I think that we really need to pay some attention to what's happened with Brian Fitzpatrick and the Fitzpatrick machine here in the Bucks County PA01 Congressional District. But in the specific, I've been really, really excited to talk to our guest tonight. So because on this week's episode, I'm talking with Kirsten Zolfo from Bucks County Indivisible. And we're going to dig down into the myth versus reality of Republican Representative Brian Fitzpatrick. Yes, that's in the PA01. You know, and that really little reputation he's got going for himself as the moderate, right? The capital M moderate, right? Fitzpatrick's moderate credentials have helped garner him endorsements from the PSEA, the PAAFL-CIO, and even the Sierra Club, right? But what's the real deal here? Like, Zolfo will help us dig into the record in one of the most highly watched congressional districts in the country. And we just found out, just after, you know, the show's coming up, is like perfect timing, because the DCCC just dropped a kind of ad going after Fitzpatrick. I'm like, oh, look who just woke up, right? Look who woke up and decided to spend some time here in the PA01. That's right, right here. Kirsten is a resident of Bucks County and a volunteer organizer with Indivisible Bucks County. She also serves on the steering committee of Pennsylvania Indivisible as a legislative chair, and in that position edits and contributes to the Pennsylvania Member of Congress Tracking Report. And if you have not checked that out, you got to click the links in today's show notes, because it's freaking awesome, right? That is an effort to keep an eye on the votes and quotes from the Commonwealth's 20 members of Congress. Kirsten is originally from New Jersey, but moved to PA when she was an undergrad at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, and has stuck around the area ever since. As welcome to the show, Kirsten.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I can't even tell you how psyched I am to have you on the show. I mean, it's like, you know, I spent a lot of time, and, you know, we've been back and forth a little bit on Messenger on this, but, you know, it's, we spent a lot of time since I've been, you know, I'm not originally from Pennsylvania either. I'm from upstate New York, or right from the Utica, New York area. And it took me, you know, it takes some time to figure out what's going on in Pennsylvania politics and everything. And then we moved in down here in Bucks County, and finding out, you know, this is, you know, Mike Fitzpatrick, of course, before Brian Fitzpatrick. And seeing all these gigantic, like, plywood sheets, like, farmers for Fitzpatrick and all this, and the moderate rated number one, you know, independent, whatever. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is like, how is this happening? So, and I know that, you know, been following you on Twitter and watching some of the work that you've been doing. I've just been absolutely thrilled. So I'm so glad that you're here tonight.
Thank you so much. Getting into politics is kind of a new thing for me. Like, it wasn't something that I was really into until after Trump's election. I have to admit, I'm one of those people who, like, I did a little bit every 2 years and did a little bit of phone banking for some candidates and thought that that was enough. And then woke up one morning and was like, how did we end up here? And that's what really activated me. So it does take a little while to get caught up on things, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Well, look, I mean, but I think your story is not, like, unusual, right? You know, in some mm-hmm. ways, look, our culture, we know that our culture and our society, like, you know, is kind of like, say, politics averse for the most part, right? I mean, it's about entertainment. It's about kind of engaging. It's about kind of like taking care of your family and your neighborhood. And those, like, and politics is like, you know, there's those people who are involved in it, but, you know, like, the most part, we're told to kind of stay away. And I do think that Trump was that wake up call. So give us a little more. I'm kind of curious to kind of, you know, that what that wake up call looked like for you. And then how you ended up kind of in this, you know, I mean, really amazing organization that sprung up, Indivisible, and then where you are now, actually digging down into the weeds of, like, congressional bills and stuff, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, as I said, you introduced me as being from New Jersey originally, and where I was from in Morris County, at least in the 80s and 90s, if you wanted to have any say in politics, you had to vote in the Republican primaries. So I registered to vote as a Republican when I came of age. And it wasn't until I moved here to, I lived in Philly for a while and then moved to Bucks. My husband and I live in Newtown. And it was when we moved here that I changed my voter registration to independent. I'd kind of fallen out with the Republican Party before that, but that was the moment where I was like, nah, it's convenient. I have to change my voter reg anyway. And I went to school for government, I should say. So, like, I had basic in civics and how the government works. That's one of the beautiful things at Franklin and Marshall. They have a really Indeed. Nice government program where they do some good Pennsylvania polling. Though Terry Madonna was not there when I was there. He came afterwards. when I woke up that November 9th, 2016 and said, holy moly, what just happened here? And was searching around for ways to get involved. It just so happened that a person, I want to say like someone two people removed, had mentioned Indivisible and this guy that had come up, and that there was this really neat new group. And I had gotten in touch. And it just so happened that on February 1st of 2017, Lower Bucks Indivisible, which was this newly formed group, because Indivisible mm-hmm. got their start at the beginning of 2017, was putting together a meeting it was supposed to have been in Yardley, and these four wonderful ladies had set it up, and it was supposed to start off being at somebody's house, and then they got so much feedback, they set it up at a pizzeria, and they got so much feedback that they ended up being in the Oxford Valley Sheraton's ballroom and had to pay to get the extra divider opened up, and there were like 400 people. Steve Sanisaro was there. I mean, it was just like, everybody, I didn't know anyone there, but I was like, I feel like I just need to get involved. And they asked for people who wanted to take more active role to stay afterwards, and I did. And I indicated that I was interested in doing legislative tracking, because part of what the Indivisible Guide, that first version, it's been updated since, has tried to instill in us is this idea that we need to renegotiate the relationship between lawmakers and their constituents. That it can't just be that they hear from us randomly for no reason at all. You know, it can't just be that they are choosing how they hear from us. They need to hear our feedback when we are unhappy with their votes and unhappy with the actions that they're taking. And to effectively do that, we need to have someone tracking the legislation. So that's where I came in. And
I think that this is like, you know, Indivisible fills, I think, a really important gap in a whole bunch of different ways. One, just in the ways that you just described. And I also remember, you know, I was kind of rooted in kind of like punk rock traditions, right? Leftist politics, you know, activist stuff kind of from going way, way back. And the gap on even coming from the left was always like, look, we'd have a lot of kind of great ideological debates about politics and systems and things like this. But nobody I knew, right, that I did really good activist work, right, with, could tell you, like, how to follow legislation, let alone what's effective in kind of engaging and pressuring legislators and why that's important. And so it was like this practical component that Indivisible said, look, here's the game plan, right? This is how you do it.
Yeah. And it's for me also, it's the values driven impetus. So like Indivisible stands for inclusivity and compassion and justice and equity, those things that most of us on the left feel really strongly about. And I found that other than at political campaign season, you weren't really hearing party officials loudly advocating for those issues around that. Like, I don't seem to remember during the Obama era when there was the fight over Dreamers. Like, maybe it's because I was not really paying enough attention, but I don't remember seeing newspaper articles about people in the streets about it. I don't remember there being Democratic lawmakers on the local level coming out and saying, like, no, we have to stand up for this. These are people in our community. And I feel like that's something that Indivisible is one of the groups that's on the ground. Obviously, there are many, but one of the groups on the ground that's willing to say, you know what, we'll throw something in front of our congressman's office. Like, we will put on an event and show him exactly how we feel about this issue, or her, how they feel about this issue. So that was something else that really appealed to me, was that feeling of like, I need to do something. So Indivisible was a really good fit for me. And one of the other things that's awesome is like, there are a ton of different Indivisible presences all over the place. And you're pretty much allowed to, as long as you're willing to abide by the same basic core principles, they're pretty much allowed to do whatever the heck they want, whether they're just a Facebook group, whether they have a Twitter presence or not, whether they're having events, or maybe they're just having weekly meetings. There was an Indivisible group that has it here in Bucks that suspended a little bit because of COVID, but they used to meet every couple of weeks to have like political discussion groups, and all sorts of forms were accepted as viable expressions of what we do as Indivisies, as the Indivisible Lambertville New Hope people would say, who, let me also shout them out, they are wonderful. They keep up regular meetings. They got me through the pandemic. So like, as an activist. So yeah, it definitely appealed to me.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's interesting, I wasn't even thinking about this ahead of tonight, cause I'm just like, so like focused. I'm like, I'm so psyched we get to talk about Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's just kind of like a really step back right there, really. Cause I mean, you know, one of the things that Indivisible got to be known for, I mean, you know, when Rachel Maddow, for example, was featuring, you know, the actions of these kind of, you know, really just like you're saying, some of these small locals, like out in Idaho and things like this, that would be showing up to the, you know, their legislators' offices. I mean, you know, showing up and being in the physical presence of your, you know, your representative was, you know, kind of part and parcel to at the core of it. So then suddenly being in a situation where everything is social distance and we have to kind of keep away from each other. I think, you know, activists of right across the, you know, board have really, really struggled with that. And I could see where that would be, you know, like raised through questions for Indivisible being like, how do we keep on doing this? So that's awesome to hear that, like, you know, people found ways and plugged through.
And we've also found ways to hold events in the meantime, where, when and where we can, and where we can do it safely. So, like, we participated, I will say that the Bucks County NAACP had definitely, is the one who hosted it was a vigil in late May related to the anniversary of George Floyd's passing, but also to put the pressure on Fitzpatrick and Casey and Toomey with their positions on police justice reform. And so, you know, we did it safely. We had a wellness table that had hand sanitizers and extra masks, and anybody that needed them could come. And, you know, we generally tried our best to keep an arm's distance away from each other. But, you know, you have to evolve with the times, because the need for gathering together as a group to show a lawmaker that we are serious about an issue just doesn't go away because we have a pandemic. It just means we have to adapt to it.
100%. So let's talk about one of those lawmakers.
Yes, Les.
I alluded to this a bit in the intro today, but, you know, it's been remarkable to me. And, you know, if you talk to Sean Kitchen about some of our pre-podcast discussions, when I'm just like losing it, when I'm watching organizations, you know, look, because like I come out of a labor history too as well, right? I'm a tradition, you know, I'm a union member. I've been into the leadership of my union with my local ABSCUF and the statewide level. And I've been there's been times I've been a thorn in the side of the leadership of my own union, right? And that just kind of, that's where I come out of. And, but so, you know, when I would see like PSEA, like endorsing Fitzpatrick, like I literally would go ballistic. And then to see, you know, it's such a lack of understanding of power, right? And so, you know, so that's that. And then to see like the Sierra Club and the AFL-CIO, you know, there were some unions that came out in support of them that kind of would tend to lean more conservative. But, you know, teachers unions, like, and environmentalist organizations. Postal workers? I mean, it drove me insane because, you know, and it's like an old model of politics that's built upon relationships and being kind of comfortable with someone. And it's this kind of, you know, model where, you know, Fitzpatrick is, you know, he's a nice guy and he'll listen to us and sometimes he'll vote our way. So we're going to support this guy. And that also, all that said to me was like that's because there was nothing in Bucks County pushing back. There was no organizational pushback. So there was no other place. But, you know, I'm going to shut my mouth now. I'm going to say, because I could go on and on about this, but I won't.
No, I feel that really strongly. If you don't mind if I take that up for just
one second.
So my thoughts on that are that a lot of organizations are reliant upon money from both Republicans and Democrats, and obviously independents too, for their donations to keep going. And they want to do everything in their power to be perceived as bipartisan. So they cultivate trying to have one or two Republicans that they can point to and say, we endorsed that one. We endorsed that one. So we're bipartisan. And I think Fitzpatrick fits that role. And he's, for all that he talks about wanting everyone to be more bipartisan, he's really only charted a path that is as wide as one person, because only one person fits that token Republican on our endorsees list role. So you end up having this situation where, like, he takes these token votes to say, oh, I voted for the PRO Act, so, you know, unions are going to love me for it. Or I voted against pregnancy discrimination, so that's going to give me a mark in the favor of women and groups that advocate around women's issues. And he leaves us in a situation where it's really hard when the Democrat in the race isn't the one getting endorsed by those groups. And then you get things like mailers that come out. And I think it was the Environmental Defense League's legislative branch. I can make a note later if it isn't. But they sent out mailers to us that said, vote for Biden and Fitzpatrick. What? Like, that is ridiculous, but that is what they do. And so, yeah, it is definitely a way he stays in office, and it's definitely damaging to Democrats that run against him, and it's something that we need to work on. And it's that everyone who belongs to one of those organizations needs to call in, who feels the way that we do, needs to call in and say, what is this? And if they're like, oh, it came from upstream, you need to say, well, put me in touch with whoever's upstream because this person's not fighting for our interests.
Right. Well, yeah. Let's pick up some oars and row then upstream. Right? Let's find out where the source of the spring. Like, come on, it's like, oh, where's the pollution coming from here? I hear that. And I all credit goes to Fitzpatrick for, knowing how to play the game and being able to play it well.
Yeah.
And I think, you laid out exactly how he proceeds, and he does, and he'll take votes that we're going to get into some of this tonight, but he'll take some votes that are really positive for labor or positive for this, and very often though those votes are taken in a context when there's no chance that's going to pass.
Filibuster's around, it doesn't matter. And back in the day when it was Mitch McConnell's legislative graveyard, it didn't matter. He could make those "I am making a statement of principles" without ever having to fear the repercussions of it coming to pass. So yeah, I agree with you 100% on that.
Excellent. So if you have to give us a kind of a sketch, especially for folks that maybe not in Bucks County, right, about why Fitzpatrick is important, maybe start to kind of fill out kind of sketches some of the votes that he's been going on, or some of the ones that you're paying attention to, whether it's through their tracking report or through kind of, just his history as a legislator.
Sure. So the thing to know about Fitzpatrick right now is it does seem like he might be groomed for something bigger than just being Pennsylvania's first congressional district's congressman. I can't say that any source has told me that, but if you look at the things that he's been assigned to. So he, in his first term out, he had a seat on the Homeland Security Committee, but was quickly removed from that for his second term because it became such a hot button issue. And I think they wanted to keep him away from it. The powers that be in the Republican Party wanted to keep him away from anything that was too, hot and nasty. And they put him in Infrastructure and Transportation, which is an incredibly lucrative committee. Mm-hmm. He was, because, a lot of construction companies and real estate industry and all, they want their slice of the pie and they want rules and regulations that are put to their benefit. And so it's a very good committee to be on for fundraising. He was assigned to the Helsinki Commission, which is a position that I think there are 9 House members that get put on it. And you get to do a lot of interacting with people overseas. And he's on the Foreign Affairs Committee. And then this term, he was assigned to the House Intelligence Select Committee, which is a really powerful position. So for all that he's only a third term congressman, he does have more power than your rank and file congressman might. What he also does, though, is he votes in a way that really, it has a very defined structure, even though it may look random to people. So like most people say, oh, he doesn't always vote with the party. And it's true. So in the last.
Let me pause for a second. I just want everybody who's listening right now, I want you really to listen to this part, because Kirsten has got this nailed so well. I just want you to pause. Okay, if you're like doing something else right now, great opportunity right here. So the structure of his voting. Excellent.
Okay. So the structure of his voting is, if an issue comes up that is going to appeal to a base that he wants to appeal to when it comes down to the time for the election, he's going to vote yes. Because as we previously discussed, he has both the filibuster in the Senate as well as up until this term, he had Mitch McConnell to backstop it so that it wouldn't pass into law. If it is an issue that is going to hurt the Republican Party, that is going to increase Democratic chances to win elections, or that it would not benefit his donors, he's going to vote no. So examples that fit this pattern just from this past, gosh, how far into this term are we? We're like 9 months in, 8 months in.
I know, it's like.
I know, it's crazy. So as I said, he voted for the PRO Act. He voted against pregnancy discrimination. He voted against elder discrimination. All of those things target groups of people he wants to appeal to. He voted for LGBTQ rights, the Equality Act, that is, and he voted for Dreamers to be have a path to citizenship. So that's making me sound like he's wonderful. But we know those things aren't going to pass into law the way that the world exists right now. So let's look at what he voted against. He voted against impeachment. He voted against overturning some Trump rules that really affect people who are lower income and who rely upon payday lenders. He has voted against DC statehood, and he's voted against bills that would improve Democrats' chances of winning. So like the For the People Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Bill that just came up last week, COVID relief. These are things
that blew my mind.
I know. He voted against the infrastructure resolution last week, too. Now, granted, that's not the final package. It's just one step along the way towards us eventually getting both the bipartisan infrastructure bill that his Problem Solvers Caucus endorsed and the much larger Build Back Better plan that includes human infrastructure, which he has said he's against. So what he's basically saying in that is he supports an infrastructure package that will pay for a lot of men's jobs, but he will not support the infrastructure package that pays for a lot of women's jobs, which, you know, irks me a bit.
And he's also a point for... Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll point for an infrastructure bill that, you know, again, he knows it's going to keep those bipartisan credentials and is going to actually have some tangible results of, you know, look, that bipartisan one that came out of the you know, the Kristen Sinema bill and all that, whatever. I was rolling my eyes on that one, but it's, you know, I mean, look, there's real money in there that's actually going to real like important things like for the infrastructure. So you could get on board that. The second one, however, what they like, he knows that it is going to go away, right? That there's no way that the Republicans, well, we'll see. I mean, you know, he wanted to make sure that he was going to be able to say, we're going to be, you know, we'll see what we'll do on this. He's going to say, well, no, I don't know about this. This would be good. I'm going to say no to this. I'm going to show that I'm strong. That's incredible because, you know, he's also saying that we want to invest in roads, and he calls himself like an environmentalist and all this, and all the impactful contributions to like combating climate change are in that second bill.
Exactly.
Right.
And I'd like, I'm sorry.
Go for it. Sorry. No, please. I'm done.
I want to talk about the environmental piece too, because that's something he relies on really heavily here in Bucks, because we do, even the Republicans in this community have a pretty strong bent towards environmentalism.
Yes.
And the thing is that he's an environmentalist, but only so far. So whenever a green initiative comes up against regulation, he's going to vote towards deregulation. And he proved that in the 115th Congress. So that's the first time, the first 2 years Trump was in office. What I like to think of is like Brian Fitzpatrick has changed considerably each term as the power structures have changed. But it's in that first term that I think we see the real Brian Fitzpatrick, because what ended up happening was bills came up that would deregulate interstate pipelines. He voted for that. Bill comes up that pushes natural gas and basically more or less ended up deregulating some aspects of the use of it. He voted for it. And that's why it staggers me that environmental groups support him. Oh, and let's not forget the GOP tax scam, which had the Anwar, drilling in the Anwar. And that one really destroys me, because that same year, 2017, he co-sponsored a bill that was going to protect the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve. Then, not 8 weeks later, I think it was, he voted for the GOP tax scam, which approved of drilling. And then the next year he's like, oh no, I'll vote against the drilling again. Like, I'm going to go back to the position I was originally. And it's like, who are you? What do you even represent? Exactly. I can't tell. Yeah, it's infuriating, because most voters will only see the, I deplore the Hatfield and McCoy brand of politics, and I want us all to be more civil, and I'm... And they buy into it, and they don't look and see what he's actually voting for and what he's not doing for this community that he could be. Yeah, well, it's very frustrating. Like, you know,
yes, and it's exactly because, you know, I think it does go back to this whole idea of the way that most people engage with politics, right? Especially when you're talking about your local representative, or even get down to even local politics. But, you know, you've got your congressional representative, Fitzpatrick, and, you know, he's out there in Washington, D.C., and then he's coming back and, you know, saying some good things, seems like a reasonable human being, can point to, I mean, legitimately point to things that he has voted for, mm-hmm. right? But because we don't have the access to, we don't have the education, right? Just as a normal way of being that allows us to kind of look at the contradiction or the whole picture, just like you've done. This is why I think the work that you're doing is so, so important. And I also think it makes a case for why we need to kind of, you know, put our bodies in front of them, right? Kind of to be say, we're going to kind of not allow you to make these arguments, that we are going to disrupt these arguments and always pointing out the way that you're working, because it's those mechanisms that are the most destructive and that actually build his power going forward.
And now you know exactly why he avoids town halls, because he knows he's going to face that pushback. So this week marks the fourth anniversary since his one and only town hall, which didn't even really meet the standards of a free and open town hall based on town hall project rules, in that he limited the attendance to it. And it was that whole golden ticket situation where like 1,000 people wanted in and he let 120 of us in. And we were so rude during that event. We brought red and green. There were about 15 of us from Indivisible. We brought red and green pieces of paper so that we, small ones, this big, so that we could abide by the rules of silence that he and Bill Pezza and whoever else was hosting the event had. And the thought was we would hold up the red piece of paper when we disagreed with something he said and the green if we agreed with it. Way to be totally civil, not disrupt any other people, but give our feedback to our lawmaker. Never held another town hall again. Bill Pezza very grumpily was like, we don't need to see papers in this event. I was like, fine, okay, we put them down. But then
it confused everybody. Everybody thought it was Christmas. This is not what we're supposed to be. You know, I've been like, what is it? You know, like, what is it?
And like, in the end, just last year during the debates, he said that Indivisible is the reason that he's not having town halls anymore. I'm like, why? Because we held up pieces of paper? Are you kidding me? He rejects any place where he has to speak extemporaneously, and he rejects any situation where he doesn't control the narrative. And that's the way he makes most voters in Bucks County think. And that sliver of Montco, sorry, I don't mean to leave you out, Montco. It lets him perpetuate that image of him being this reasonable moderate who only has a local boy. And it's damaging our community.
No, exactly. It really is. I remember when I got my first, phone calls for the telephone town hall. You know, your representative Brian Fitzpatrick is calling for you. And I don't know if it was the first or second time, whatever. But early on, I'm going to listen. I'm going to see what this is all about. I'm like, oh my God, that's brilliant, because you don't have to talk to anybody you don't want to talk to. There's nobody even physically present there. You have to be kind of allowed to speak within the space. I'm like, wow, that is really good.
And for the first 2 years, they really limited who they called. I was on one of the ones that they had in June of 2017, and I took notes on it and put those notes out through the Lower Bucks Indivisible website. And then I was scrubbed from the list for the next year. And it took a lot of bitching and moaning before I finally got another call again from them. But yeah, I've heard them drop callers that ask something that he wasn't expecting. I heard, now this is unverified, but I trust my ears on this one. One of his staff people asked one of his questions once, and it was something that was based on a press release that he had just dropped that day. So it was like clear to someone who follows his work that it was a staff member who asked it. But you know, it's all part of his image control. It's effective, and we need to combat it.
Exactly. So, you know, one of the things that I want to, Emily's joining, she kind of jumped in a couple of things. She just said, you know, one, what do you think he's being groomed for? You kind of saying it seems to be something bigger. And then she was also pointing out there's a big anti-quarry movement up in Springfield Township, right? Which is also kind of dealing with some of the environmental impact of that quarry out there.
Asbestos in the quarry, something along those lines, I seem to remember reading. I mean, it burnishes his supposed environmentalist credentials. As far as what I thought he was being groomed for a while there, I thought he was being groomed to run against Casey in 2024. But again, that's just guesswork on my part. I have no sources that say that. But I just thought that the powers that be in the Republican Party looked at him and said, you know, Casey has gotten taken a big left swing, and we now call him Bold Bob because he's been doing some good stuff lately. More than lately. That was unfair to say. He's been doing some good stuff for a while, but he keeps going left. And since he had that perception of being a moderate Democrat, I thought they were maybe trying to run a moderate Republican against him. But I don't know. That's just a guess. It just feels that way from the assignment that he's getting. And normally someone who votes as much as he has done against the Republican Party line, because as we said, like, he does take some of those votes to make himself look good to voters. Normally someone like that wouldn't get as much support from the Republican Party at large. But Kevin McCarthy has come here to this area to fundraise for him. Kevin McCarthy is the House Minority Leader.
Yep.
Steve Scalise, who's the Republican whip. They have come here to Bucks to fundraise. Paul Ryan came here to Bucks to fundraise. So, like, you don't normally get that when you're placing the kind of voting record that Fitzpatrick does. So clearly they have their eye on something.
Well, and I think that, you know, I'm reminded, and again, we're in the kind of pure conjecture kind of realm of things, but I was reminded of the kind of dynamic that Mario Cuomo set up in New York State for the longest time, right? Where he had his group of quote unquote moderate Republicans and kind of like conservative Democrats that would allow him to control any legislation and shoot down anything that was progressive. Right. Because it was this bipartisan group. And I look at what's happening right now with Kristen Sinema and with Joe Manchin. And I think about, man, to have somebody like that on the Republican side that would get in with those folks that could virtually disrupt any kind of legislation that they didn't want. So a way of kind of like installing a kind of, you know, an overpowered minority in the Senate. As a way of doing that. And I've always thought that, man, Fitzpatrick fits that mold.
Well, I think that's what the Problem Solvers Caucus is, Kevin. I mean, trying to be. There is a person on Twitter who I know by story. I'm trying to remember her name is at JGCO Canada on Twitter.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, friend of the show.
She's done so much digging on Bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus and the No Labels organization, which is a group of billionaires who do everything they can to support moderate politics. But what does that actually look like? Well, if you look at what they've done recently, we have one article from The Intercept where they got a call between Problem Solvers Caucus billionaire donors and Joe Manchin, where they literally cited Brian Fitzpatrick as the example of funneling money towards a politician. They said, we gave him $500,000 in 2 weeks. That's why we use hashtag bought and sold Brian. But the other thing that they've done is they did a lot of polling here in Bucks, very leading polling having to do with the infrastructure packages. But they then dropped that in the 33 congressional districts, the information about how people want bipartisan infrastructure, but they don't want the other kind. And then after that little stupid Josh Gottheimer nonsense last week where they tried to throw a monkey wrench into the gears of the infrastructure process, they're all problem solvers. They're all the people who are getting the money from No Labels. And it didn't work. It just made them look stupid. As Nancy Pelosi said, it's not time for amateur hour. But why did they do it? To stop the big bill. The big bill that's going to benefit the most people. And that's because billionaires like the status quo where they're billionaires. And Fitzpatrick is the recipient of a lot of their largesse. Let's put it that way.
100%. So, okay. So, I mean, there's so, and I've already said this, I'm going to let everybody in on this, kind of into the back room here for a second. One of the things that I do think is absolutely critical to do in this next round of election cycle, we got elections coming up in 2022, right, that we need to be paying attention to is, and I really do think the PA one, Fitzpatrick's district, really, I mean, people are starting to pay attention. The fact that the DCCC like literally woke up from its political slumber that it's been in for, I don't know, as long as I've been alive. But as long as they've kind of jumped in and pointed to Fitzpatrick shows you that they realize that this is high stakes game. Because let's remember in 2022, there's the possibility of actually, you know, Democrats losing the House. Because it is a narrow margin right now. And really, you know, to go on the offensive means that you got to do more than just protect the seats, but you actually have to gain seats, right? You want a larger majority. And Fitzpatrick is one of these, you know, people that they've kind of left alone for a long time because of his quote unquote moderate credentials, right? That he could be counted on for, you know, showcase votes when it was convenient for him. So what I said to Kirsten before the show too, as well, we went offline, is like, I want to have her back on as we're to look at specific things. I really kind of see this as an opportunity to lay out some of the broader strokes today, because there are so many specifics to kind of get into, like the insurrection, the January 6th commission, for example, is a great example of this. But let me kind of turn it to you and say, okay, look, if we're going to you know, for our show tonight, right, where do you think would be good things to kind of dig into a little bit to kind of give folks a sense of kind of what's happening and some of the kind of critical legislation that kind of points to the reason why we need to kind of get this guy out?
Okay. That's, well, I mean, honestly,
it's a lot. I know.
the COVID bills and between the COVID bills and the infrastructure vote that he just took, I think we have to point that out to our neighbors constantly, that Brian Fitzpatrick is not voting on your behalf, that this was something that we all benefited from those, or sorry, a large proportion of this district benefited from those checks. A large proportion of this district benefits from the child tax credit. Sorry.
Tax credit.
Yeah. I don't have kids, so I'm not quite as up on that one. But like, these are things that if neighbors bring up those, you have to be willing to say to them, Brian Fitzpatrick voted against those. And we'll see what ends up happening with infrastructure, but it may very well be that he votes against that as well. We need to keep our eye on, and I know this sounds tangential, but we have to keep our eye on what's happening in the Senate with the filibuster. I mean, Bob Casey has been wonderful about talking in public about his changing position, or his changed past tense position on the filibuster. Mm-hmm. He now supports either ending it or a carve out. That's going to be the key to finding out where Brian Fitzpatrick truly stands, because if bills can suddenly start passing through the Senate, we may end up seeing a change Brian Fitzpatrick, and he may veer more towards the right. And honestly, we have to keep up pressure and have those. We talked about how we don't talk about politics with our neighbors and stuff. We have to. Like, we are in an era where we just have to talk about some of these things sometimes. And Brian Fitzpatrick's willingness to go to Boy Scout events and the way that he builds community cannot be allowed to outweigh what he's actually doing in Congress. You can't like him because he showed up at your nephew's, you know, at your nephew's Eagle Scout thing. That's great that he did that, but that doesn't do anything for the other 750,000 constituents. Like, we have to look at what he's actually doing. So I don't know what else is coming up on the schedule from a voting perspective. I just kind of follow it as the votes happen.
Sure, sure.
But I mean, those are the things that we have to do.
Well, you know, he got a lot of, this is the January 6th commission, I mm-hmm. thought was such a great micro lens to look at everything that he's done thus far. And there was just an interview that he gave. I wish I had it tagged here, but it was like to CBS out of Philly or something like this, where he was talking about his moderate approach, right? He was talking about his, this approach that he takes that's very considered and thinks we need to be doing things in bipartisan, in very kind of like Joe Manchin language. This is what was kind of cueing me into this. And so let's be clear. So what happened in the first, there was the bipartisan January 6th commission that he voted for.
Yeah.
Right. In the House. Right. Mm-hmm. But Mitch McConnell and the folks in the Senate had already indicated not a chance, right?
Which we are not. I'm sorry for interrupting. I feel like I have to point out Republicans negotiated that. There's a poor New York Republican whose name's escaping me right now at this moment, who like literally won over every single thing that the Republicans wanted on their wish list. And they wrote the bill together. He wrote the bill together with Benny Thompson, who's now the chair of the Select Committee. And even though they got everything they wanted, they voted no. Now, Fitzpatrick did vote yes on that because, as he said at the time, like, this was going to be a bipartisan process. But then when you get to the next one, as I'm sure you were about to point out, when you get to the committee that Nancy Pelosi set up as her power as the Speaker of the House, he voted against that one, saying that it wasn't bipartisan. But the fact is, it is. Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger are Republicans, and they are doing
pretty conservative Republicans.
I think if you had like those political meters that show where you stand on things, like Liz Cheney and I might just be the exact opposite. But like, they are bipartisans and they're doing the hard work of bipartisanship, which is not so popular. Like, people are not happy with them on their side of the boat. But Fitzpatrick is saying, oh, that group's not bipartisan. Yeah, it is. And they're doing the real stuff. If I were speaking to Brian Fitzpatrick, you are not really. You're doing show bipartisanship. You're doing fake bipartisanship. And we can't afford that right now. Like, our country is, as you point out with the seditionists, like, we are in a bad space. Yes. Voter suppression is rampant. Like, we cannot afford people who are just putting on a bipartisan hat just to be like, I'm bipartisan, give me your vote because I like good things. Like, that doesn't work these days. We can't afford it.
No, 100%. You know what? And for me, it was a big tell about where Fitzpatrick was. Because if I was Brian Fitzpatrick and I was really committed to the bipartisan stuff, that would have been a perfect opportunity for him to step forward. Right. And basically, because look, I mean, he's a former FBI agent. Right. So you'd think there would have even a professional interest directly in kind of preventing the, you know, destabilization of American democracy. Mm-hmm. Right. And law enforcement. Right. Watching fellow what he would probably call brothers and sisters. Right. You know, the police, watch them getting beaten. You would think this would be like a no-brainer for him to step forward.
You would think
and say like, hey, look, Nancy Pelosi, I know we don't agree on a whole bunch of stuff, but I want in, right? That I find it is a disgrace that the Senate decided to say no to this. And I, as a former FBI officer who's committed to this stuff and voted for the previous bill, I will volunteer to be on this again too. But no, he didn't do that.
No, he didn't.
Right? And like you said, Lynn Cheney, right, lost her position in leadership, right, precisely because of her outspoken stance. And Fitzpatrick, however, protected himself, right, and his own political aspirations over doing what's right in terms of looking at that commission. And for me, that was like, there you go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the perfect tell that he is very much a party man, even if the numbers don't always back that. There are key votes that you can look to and say, this is the real Brian Fitzpatrick. I agree.
Yes, indeed. So let me ask you this. This is this always happens to me, right? Because I get off and we kind of start in one direction and there's other things that come up and then we go off into the thing. But so let me just ask you, one of the things we're going to take a look at, you know, there was that recent piece we mentioned before about, that came out in the Intelligencer, right? That was kind of this bio of him, right? You know, he's proud of his bipartisan record and does that leave him here vulnerable in 2022? I wonder if you could kind of talk through a little bit about the framing of that and how that kind of that piece kind of positioned Fitzpatrick and, you know, what do you see the media's role has been in kind of bolstering up his, his status?
Yeah. So anyone who follows me on Twitter already will know that that piece made me furious. And even though I know my bosses aren't listening, even though I was at work, I had to like throw off a quick thread about it. So basically, The piece went into, oh, he's gotten these bipartisanship awards, and he co-sponsored more bills written by Democrats in the 116th Congress, so the last one, than anyone else. And that's what makes him so wonderful. So I was like, you know what? Let's look at this. So first of all, that Lugar Award that they get all excited about, all it does is rate how many times you've co-sponsored a bill. That's signing your name. He signed his name 1,000 times, and we're supposed to be really excited about that. I'm not. I'm not impressed. So then,
well, to be fair, we don't know if he's got carpal tunnel or not. So it might have been a little bit.
True. I've never seen him wearing a glove, but you know, true. So then I was like, you know what? Let me take a look. So there's a wonderful website called GovTrack. It's govtrack.us. I use it all the time. It's really what between that and congress.gov. They're what power that member of Congress tracking report that I put out. And so I was like, okay, let me look at this. Let's see how many bills he co-sponsored from Democrats and ended up being about 1,000. Let's see how many of them actually passed. It was 37. 37 of them passed. And then I started looking at the bills that actually passed. And it was post office namings.
Yeah, it was
coins. It was, ooh, medals, not coins. There was a medal in there. Now, there were one or two bills that were great. I'm not saying they weren't great. There was that Great American Outdoors Act that was funding for national parks. Fabulous. There were a couple of much smaller bills about veteran services. Great. But is it award worthy? Did he do an awful lot for the voters and the constituents in Pennsylvania's 1st Congressional District? Is it worthy of doing a really big article in the Inquirer about? No, it really isn't. We have to stop, you know. I have family members who are Republicans, and I'll hear from them about, oh, participation awards. We don't have to, kids getting participation awards. That award for signing his name 1,000 times,
right?
That was the legislator equivalent of a participation award. And I'm just not having it. And we need to debunk these things when people bring them up to us. Do you know what that award was actually for? It was for signing his name.
signing his name lots of times.
A lot of
for
times.
Things that didn't go anywhere.
And for wait, for right? what we know, it wasn't actually him signing his name. It's probably a staff member just saying, yeah, 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 put it on it.
Exactly. Okay, wait, does this have anything controversial? Is this the most milquetoast bill that you could possibly have? What is this about? Yeah. Oh, it's about kind of, you know, making sure that streets are clean. Okay, great. Yeah, we're going to do that. Right?
Yeah.
through volunteers, right? You know, yeah. You know, so no one has to get paid
no money.
For it. Right, exactly. Not going to cost anything. Not going to do anything. It's just going to be like a, it's not even a real, you know, not even a real coin that we're dedicating. It's only a virtual coin, right? So it's like, you know, whatever. It is remarkable, though. But he seems to get, I mean, you know, and I know that, you know, in our Wednesday show when I with Cyril Michaleko, and one of the things that Cyril and I have talked about, you know, both on and offline, is like, you know, this is also goes to some of the media in Bucks County, right, that has really given Fitzpatrick a pass.
Yeah.
Like for the longest time. And I do think it's, you know, it has to do with this old model of, you know, kind of transactional politics, and, you know, you're in within the same circles of people, and, you know, look, and he is, you got to give him the fact that, you know, he abides by like basic principles of politeness and human beingness, right? I mean, that's real.
Sure.
And you know what? And I do think that, you know, reporters and other folks, they do appreciate that. You're not kind of walking in and just getting a whole bunch of nonsense or what appears to be nonsense, right? And someone who's actually going to talk to you about stuff. And I think that's kept a lot of those doors open for him.
Yeah, I think, like, that there are some newspaper outlets and some media outlets in general that do have a little bit of an incumbency bias, no matter who the incumbent is, because the incumbent gives you access to events. The incumbent says, I'm going to be going to this classroom to do this town hall. Do you want to do a piece on, or, you know, not town hall, sorry, town hall, not a real one. you know, do you want to do a piece on it? I'm going to bring my friend Connor Lamb, who's a Democrat. What do you want to see the two of us in action together? And I mean, those things actually happen. So they're preserving access a little bit. But what you also have is a lawmaker in Fitzpatrick in particular, who, if you don't toe the line, you get cut off. I mean, I know that in a recent article of a local paper, it was Tom Sofield at the Levittown Now threw in a reference to the fact that Fitzpatrick's communications office turned him down 24 times in a row on request for comment after Tom had the nerve to do an article about Trump doing a robocall for Fitzpatrick in 2020. So he reported, Tom Sofield at the Levittown Now reported on actual news, and Fitzpatrick's office cut him off because he wasn't abiding by this, I guess, unspoken rule that says you have to depict me as a bipartisan incumbent. And it's ugly. I mean, when you cut off your hometown newspaper, that's nasty.
And that is nasty.
Yeah, it's just really ugly. And I can't fault some media outlets for wanting to preserve their access, but it really doesn't help. So, like, a perfect example of something that I would love to see a story on is Brian Fitzpatrick dropped a press release a couple of weeks ago, beginning of August, about this bill that he's doing that looks so wonderful. And it's about him opposing jobs being outsourced. And if you dig down into what the bill actually does, it says that they're going to produce a public list of call center companies that are outsourcing American jobs. Thankfully, we didn't see any articles that were like so excited about this bill. But I really wish a reporter had taken up that press release, because if they looked just 2 years ago, Brian Fitzpatrick voted against a corporate outsourcing transparency bill. Like, a bill that was literally the exact same thing, except on a slightly larger scale, than the bill that he just introduced. So that's why we need media to follow up on what lawmakers are doing. Because the same thing happened in 2018, when he created a bill that never went anywhere about presidential transparency on their taxes. And the Courier did report on that one glowingly. And they didn't look to the fact that just the previous year, for 24 times, he voted against Trump releasing his taxes. So, like, we need outlets that are willing to do that. And it doesn't help voters that they don't.
Absolutely. In many cases, it's that, you know, that hometown paper that is, you know, and, you know, maybe even just that Sunday paper, which is going to determine, like, what a lot of people are getting in terms of their news. You know, people who are just not as invested and not as interested in politics, right? They're reading that paper for a kind of broad sketch of stuff. And if, you know, people like Brian Fitzpatrick always come off like, you know, smelling like roses, right? Well, you know, it's, you know, the devil you know, right? I mean, it's, you know, and especially if he's smiling and he's kind of, he's nice and stuff.
No, I don't want to leave it. I'm sorry, really fast. I don't want to leave it that I don't like the Courier. I like the Courier a lot these days, especially since Gannett, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce it, took over. Gannett, I think Cyril's doing amazing work there. There are reporters that do a fabulous job, like Chris Ollery, and I think it's Peg Kwan. Is it Peg Kwan? Like, I'm thrilled. But I just wish they could dig a little deeper. That's all.
No, but I think it's important. And like, look, I would even say with the Intelligencer, right? The Intelligencer started doing some really kind of amazing investigative work when it came to kind of the environmental impact of those chemicals. I'm framing them like over in Warm. Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. Like over in Warminster and all the township, all this kind of stuff. That's, you know, that's the kind of news that's really important, right? And actually directly affects people's lives. And, you know, if people are going to say that they're going to represent us, they need to be able to like speak to those things. And so all kudos in the world to that. And like, I'll say right off the top, I subscribe to both of those. I subscribe to the Intel and I subscribe to the Courier Times, right? Because I believe that you got to support these local papers, unless they're so far gone, then, you know, whatever. But, you know, because that's been part of the impact of why access and things become so important, because like, you know, newsrooms have been cut. They've seen their budgets slashed. There's oftentimes two or three reporters that are, you know, stringing together pieces of income in order to follow stories and keep a journalist job, and are trying to do this work. And, you know, if you're going to say something's going to piss off and then you're the one supposed to be covering it, but you can't get access, that's potentially your job on the line.
Yeah.
Right. So all kudos in the world to some of the work that is going on now. So again, not kind of knock it, but this is more of encouragement. You know, one of the things that, you know, I would, you know, would say right now too, as well, is like when you see pieces like that, not just the stuff, what generally generates a lot of like comments, right, or editorials, the things that piss you off. Right. But I also think that it's really important for listeners of this program, but people who are readers of those papers, when you see really good reporting, right, that's doing that investigative work, that's giving you the knowledge that's going to kind of empower you for kind of holding these people accountable, email them that too. Write in when you see good work happening so that they know that there's people out there. Right, doing that. And what I'll tell you, when I saw it, when they hired Cyril and they started doing some good reporting, I wrote them a letter and said, I'm subscribing to your paper. I've lived in Bucks County since, you know, 2008. I've lived in Bucks County here and I haven't subscribed to this, but I see that what you're finally doing, I'm in, right? I will support this.
I provided feedback to them as well when they finally had a progressive columnist. I was thrilled because for too long it was J.D. Mullane. Alone.
Right,
well, exactly, I guess
exactly.
Girls are too, but
oof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So I got one more thing before we kind of bring tonight's kind of version of this to a close. I don't want to take up your entire evening, although I could talk to you all night long about Fitzpatrick. Yeah. But so, and then I will say, you know, that we're going to kind of ask you this, and then we'll kind of go to a break, and we'll come back and we'll do, if anybody does want to call in at that point, you can, there's information on how to kind of access the riverside.fm if you're not there already. You'll have to shut off your YouTube or at least silence it so you're not getting the feedback. You ever called into a radio show and you call in and say, you got to turn it off because you're getting all this feedback? Same thing will happen here. And it'll put in a delay. So you need to kind of get on over to Riverside. Information on that is in today's show notes. Be happy to take your calls and thoughts, both on what Kirsten has brought to the table tonight, or if there's other things that are on your mind that you want to talk about. That's really a kind of community space, and we can do that after the break. But this is kind of more conjecture and kind of zoom out a little bit here. One of the other things, and this is not specific to Fitzpatrick, but one of the things that's been frustrating for me as well, growing up in this district or being living in this district, it seems that we don't have an organized opposition in the way that's necessary to really go up again. Now, that some of that seems to be changing, and I think some of these school board races is are really waking people up to like how off the rails things are actually going. And we're finding out, you know, again, I live in the Penridge School District, so, and we've got some awesome candidates running for school board this time, and, you know, people who are going through trainings like the Emerge program, for example, and doing some of that kind of organizing on the ground to build that the contrary. But so, you know, looking forward, and you know, I know you're not like a forecaster, a political forecaster here, but looking forward, I mean, are you hopeful, kind of looking forward for the organizing that's happening on the ground, that we might actually get some, like, a strong challenger for Fitzpatrick going into 2022?
I sure hope so. I mean, I hear rumors and stuff, and they leave me feeling pretty happy about if the rumors that I'm hearing are coming true. And I have to admit, I don't feel comfortable saying them on the show right now. But
I
do feel like in 2022 we will have someone that we will be very happy with, and that we will be able to back very confidently. What I would also say is, I think normalizing people turning out to civic events, whether it's your township meeting or whether it's your school board or anything along those lines, like, we have to become a more involved electorate. We cannot coast. We have to say to ourselves, it is my feeling that we have to say to ourselves, I am willing to commit X hours a month towards something. Whatever that X is whatever you can swing. But even if it's writing a letter to the newspaper, because letters to the editor are effective. If it's, you know what, I can show up to one school board meeting a month, but I really want to see what's going on and I want to make public comment. Like, we have to make that a standard, not the deviation from the norm. We just, because at every level of politics, we're being confronted by extremism. And here in Bucks, it might just be more apparent than in other places, but it's everywhere. And we have to be there to confront it, because I don't know about you, I don't want to have a bunch of seditionists sitting in my township council or on my school board. I don't want anti-maskers there. I don't have kids, and I'm still terrified about what's happening with the Council Rock school board. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I would say. I would say the more we get involved, the bigger the bench that the parties can build for running people in the future. And that's what really
100%. Matters. 100%. And I'll say, you know, like, this is one thing that, say, Indivisible, like, organizations like Indivisible, like DSA, like PA Stands Up, a whole bunch of different organizations are showing us.
Turn PA Blue. That, sorry, I had to say it.
Yeah, Turn PA Blue, right? That we can push, we can move things, right? We don't have to wait for, like, an official organ of, say, like, you know, the Democratic Party or the Pennsylvania Democratic Party or the Bucks County, you know, Democratic Committee, whatever it might be, right? If we're involved, we have the energy, right? And we can move things in one direction or another. And it's like anything else, right? I mean, we have to learn to exercise those muscles, right? I mean, you can't go from, like, you know, sitting on the couch watching football to, like, you know, like an like NFL player. No, you have to actually put in the work and exercise the muscles and do the practice, right? Otherwise, your muscles atrophy, right? And, you know, politics or anything else works in the same way, right? We got to find these places to practice. So I love the way, you know, you say that. That normalized civic engagement. That's freaking the best advice that we could leave people.
I don't know what's going to fit on a bumper sticker, but I'll leave it as my motto for the time being.
Yeah, get off the couch. How's that? We'll start with that.
That works. Yeah. There you go.
All right. Awesome. Well, Kirsten, look, I appreciate you hanging out and coming on tonight. And like I said, I'd love to have you back on the show. We can drill down into some specifics. Now, I think we got this, you know, we've done a little broad base of Fitzpatrick, what's happening here on the ground, some of your background. And I'd love to have you back for as you see things coming up to make sure that we'll do our part, at least here at Raging Chicken, to make sure that we got a laser focus on making sure that the PA1 goes blue. So
thank you so much. And I promise I will be back to talk more about votes and quotes from Fitzpatrick.
Woohoo! Fantastic. Excellent. Excellent. All right, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Once again, I want to thank you for tuning in. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back after the break, I'll have some closing thoughts. If you got questions, additional comments, I know Emily, you've got a bunch of stuff you put up in the chat. Hope we could get to a couple of those things too as well. Feel free to keep the chat coming, and if you do have access to riverside.fm and you want to kind of call in, we'd love to hear from you too as well. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this quick break. Hey, everybody. It's Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I'm kind of back here with some closing thoughts and maybe take a look at some of your comments and questions you post up. And for those of you who are sticking around, Kirsten is still here.
Hi.
So if you do get something specific for her, please let me know. So let me actually, before I have some comments here, Emily had a bunch of stuff, and I'll kind of list some of these to you and see if you want to pick up any of this stuff, just a response. So let's see. So she says, this after the, she was one who was bringing up stuff about the anti-quarry movement in Springfield. Let's see. Can we poison the reputation of the filibuster as a racist holdover? You think that'll work? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I would say definitely get on Twitter on a Friday when we have filibuster Fridays. Use the hashtags and the filibuster and filibuster Friday. I mean, like, filibuster as a Jim Crow relic is something that's being discussed heavily. And I know that there are lots of people who use that talking point. I maybe seem like a Bob Casey booster these days, but seriously, he's doing good work. He's come out and said it straight out that at its heart, the filibuster and voter suppression are both about white supremacy. So, like, yeah, there are lots of lawmakers who are willing to talk about it like that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that one of my thoughts on that, too, as well, is when you're thinking about I look at this as strategically and tactically, right? So I think about, like, you know, can you poison the rep of the filibuster as a racist holdover? If your audience is, like, the American people, I would say, well, that's, you know, you're good luck, right? Because, you know, I'm just, you know, a very much a realist when it comes to that, you know, that kind of politicking. So do I think that's, you know, people are going to be like, oh my God, it's a racist holdover. Oh my God, we need to get rid of the filibuster. I don't think it's going to work like that. But what I do think it does when and I think a lot of the work of exposing what the filibuster is, its background and all this stuff, what that does is that charges up your base. Right. That gets more people communicating to their neighbors. Right. About what the heck this filibuster thing is. Right. And that's incredibly valuable. And one of the things that's always frustrated me about a lot of organizing in the Democratic Party, like official Democratic Party stuff, has been, you know, the focus on we need to think about the American people and what the American people say. I get why you do that politically. Right. I get why you do that in terms of, like, you know, like a discursive move and so on. But when you're talking about winning elections, you got to make sure that the people who are on your side, right, are going to be actors for you, that are going to be charged up. I mean, the right wing is like genius about this. I mean, they literally have barrels and barrels of red meat in every dish. It's like they're just throwing it out there, right, to keep those people engaged. And so when I think about, you know, I know for me when I. What got me following the filibuster really closely, obviously, with what's happening in kind of national politics now and even before this. But I've learned so much about the specifics of that history, right, that have cemented my beliefs more than I ever possibly could have. So I have those counter arguments, and I think that that's where it could be really effective. I mean, I don't know if you see it in that kind of way or
if
not.
I can add one thing about it. If you're talking about changing minds, this is another time I'm going to follow Bob Casey's lead. And in fact, we did this during a bunch of the events that we held earlier this summer. Talk to people about it as the 60 vote rule. There are a lot of people who are used to hearing the word filibuster, but they may not realize exactly what it means. And most Americans are pretty committed to the idea of majority rule, the idea that, like, if you have the majority, you get to make the rules. And when you tell them, no, 60 vote rule, you have to have 60. They're like, what? Yeah, 60. So I think that may do, if you're talking about widespread talking to perhaps low info voters, calling it the 60 vote rule may actually be more of a way to change people's minds than talking about all of the racist history of it.
Right. Oh, that's a good call. I love that kind of thing. It makes it nice and simple, making people think, yeah, it's 60 vote rule. And people are like, what? Right. I like that. I like that move.
Yeah. We owe that to Bob Casey.
We owe that to Bob. All right, Bob, I'll give you credit. I was pretty hard on that guy for a while too, as well. And then, you know, I had to, you know, I admitted on the show with Sean, because Sean was always like, Casey, not that. I'm like, come on. And then I'm like, every time Casey does, you send me something, I'm like, all right, okay, I got a credit for that. Like, I'm, you know, credit where credit is due. But yeah, so, you know, this is one thing, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, or anybody else's thoughts on this too as well, if you got anything else to hear. But, you know, I'm of the mind when it comes to the, like, the PA first, that we've got to really think about power. And, you know, I always remember the first time I read Saul Alinsky's work, when he says there's a lot of dirty words, you know, that you hear kind of the liberals or left or end of the perspective that you're not supposed to say, because, you know, you hear the word power and like, oh, we're not gonna talk about power. Why? Because we've got this cliche, right, that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, mm-hmm. right? But democracy is ruled by the people, right? Democracy is that we have the power, right, to be both the ones who govern and those who are governed, right? Mm-hmm. That dual role. And yes, we do it through a representative system here in this country. I get that, right? It's not the direct democracy. But it is ultimately about power, and not power over people to, like, make them do your will, right? But to basically to have a really concrete ability to, you know, act on our future. You know, to be part of the people who decide what our future is going to look like. And yes, you know, as we're individuals, it's why we have to do it collectively, right? Because that's where we kind of gain this power. And, you know, and because I think that's gotten a bad name, when we look at someone like Fitzpatrick, you know, people are looking at him as a personality, as an individual candidate, right? And, you know, conversations I've had with some people, like, you know, not everyday teachers, right? Everyday teachers are, you know, sometimes they roll their eyes at their own, you know, what their the union reps will do and things like that, the leadership and why they do this. But I mean, like, some of the folks that I know from a little bit higher up in the PSEA or even the AFL-CIO say, like, you know, yes, okay, he might be a good guy, right? I'll give you that, right? I don't know him, right? But okay, he's a good guy, right? Okay, so, great. This is not about just being a good guy. Right. It's about having a majority of seats in Congress.
Yeah.
And if you want to make sure that union rights, for example, are protected, you want to make sure that we're going to adjust climate change. You want to make sure that kind of, like, you know, the rights for kind of women's right to an abortion and health care. Right? If you exactly. I mean, let's go down the list. Yeah. Right. Every single one of those things depends on a majority. Right. And so, OK, he's a nice guy. But, you know, if he's a nice guy and you got a great relationship with him, you should be able to say, hey, listen, Brian, you're a great guy. You know, like, you thing like this. But look, this is not about you individually here. But look, we're here. We're trying to get a majority here. So I'm sorry. We're not going to go out against you, but we're not going to endorse you this time.
Right? Yeah. And I have to admit, when I said judges, I realized that's the Senate. Sorry. But it is the idea.
But it's the same principle,
yeah,
though, right?
People say, like, oh, you know, he's not Kevin McCarthy. He's not Trump. He's not this. But no, it's him being elected if the Republicans take the majority of seats. Means that a Republican will be a Speaker of the House and we'll get to choose
exactly.
the agenda. Then we get back the Brian Fitzpatrick that voted with Trump 84% of the time, because the bills that we want to see that would create the circumstances like the PRO Act or like the Equality Act, they won't come up for a vote because only a Democrat puts those up for a vote. So yeah, it is 100%. You have to build into that. Sorry. There was an article, I could go on for that for a while, I need to cut that off. There was an article a couple of months ago that cited a registered Democrat in New Hope, and I'm forgetting what the name was, but he was like, I like Brian Fitzpatrick, he seems really nice to me, and he, you know, he doesn't always vote the way I want, but he does it enough of the time. But it's like, that's not good enough. It's just not. We need to have a Nancy Pelosi or someone like her who is setting the agenda for the House, or maybe even left of her. We can't have a Kevin McCarthy, because not only is he awful, he's also stupid. Like, we can't afford to have that as a nation.
It's a fair point right there.
You know, Brian Fitzpatrick means Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House. There's an equal sign in between those two names. We have to get used to that idea.
Well, and if, you know, and if, look, we've heard the language about the language of crisis, right? This is crisis of American democracy. This is the climate crisis. This is like the governance crisis. Like, I mean, one after the other, the crisis of kind of racial equity, right? Right. A multicultural mm-hmm. democracy, all this stuff. Well, if we believe it's a crisis, then we have to make sure that we secure the majority of, like, the majority of people who are going to act on those crises, right? And, you know, yes, it might make people some uncomfortable to say, like, well, but I like him. okay, that's fine. You don't have to be mean to the guy. Right. You just don't have to vote for him. Right. You know, and like, and that's, you know, that's been one, I think, you know, one of the unfortunate ways that our kind of politics have been driven into this, like, you know, team sport, blood sport, really, of late, where, you know, you feel like being mean or voting against someone is somehow equated with like politeness or being mean or something. It's like, no. You just need to think about what are the things that are going to get us to where we need to go. If we believe that, you know, my kid's future is going to depend on a large part on whether or not we choose to address climate change, right? And quickly. And what that means is that I have to be guaranteed, right? Anyone who's got kids or just wants to live in a decent world, right, going forward and not have to worry about whether or not they're going to be able to breathe, right? I mean, seriously, then we need to be in a situation where we are confident that the person that we're putting in office and who's going to be the leadership of the House, for example, is going to drive that agenda.
Right. You can't just say to yourself, as a voter, you can't just say to yourself, well, Brian Fitzpatrick seems pretty good on issues of climate change. Yes, but his presence in the House means that conceivably that a Republican is in charge of the House and setting the agenda. And we know how they feel about the fossil fuel industry. All you have to do is follow any number of Republicans here in Pennsylvania, like Fred Keller in Pennsylvania's 12th or Guy Reschenthaler in Pennsylvania's 14th. And they will tell you all about how wonderful natural gas is and how they want to commit us to more decades, more of a fossil fuel future. And it's like, well, that's what you're going to get if we allow a Republican to be Speaker of the House. A fossil fuel 100%. Future, which is no future at all.
Which is exactly. Well, crazy. Oh, crazy. Let me see if I go through. Is there any else of the comments that are here? No, I think we got actually kind of most of them. But, you know, I have to say, well, and this I'm just going to say, you know, I should have said this during the kind of first half of the show, too, as well. But like, thank God you're on Twitter. Seriously.
No, wait, not just like, on Twitter, though, but I'm really trying to get more Indivisible folks on Twitter. Some fellow activists, Matt Harker in Philadelphia with Philadelphia Indivisible and Laura Rose with Indivisible Bucks County, and I worked on creating a training program for other Indivisibles, particularly the ones on the western half of the state that don't have quite the presence. Because, like, if you're having an event in person, it's wonderful that you do it. But if you can't get pictures of it up on social media, if you haven't gotten media coverage, it didn't have as much of an effect as if you have it and the whole world can see it. So it's really 100%. Important that we get people up there. We have to improve our communications and our amplifications of our values and the events that we do to promote those values.
No, awesome. Well, hey, I'll put this out to you then, too, as well. It's like, you know, if you got other folks that you're working with, too, as well. I mean, I would love to do like we do like a little roundtable. We have a couple like 2-3 folks on. Right. One of these times where I mean, I think that'd be really cool to do just so that we can even cover more just like geographic terrain, for example, what's happening in these different areas.
That could be a lot of fun. Definitely.
Awesome. Fantastic. All right, I'm looking at the clock, and it's about time I start getting these kids ready off the bed. So,
yeah, there's a dog in this household that needs to be fed that I did not do because she rattles the dish too much. I was like, that's not going to sound good.
There you go. Well, hey, look, thank you so much again for hanging out tonight and kind of coming on. And I do mean that about, you know, what you're doing kind of on Twitter, just as a way to kind of like, man, I felt like I could relax and breathe out because I could constantly, I knew that if I check on and see what you got up that day, like I know that I'm up to date at what's happening. So I really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Oh, you got it. You got it.
It's been a real pleasure. You have a wonderful evening.
Oh, yeah, you do too. All right, everybody, thank you all for tuning in tonight. I really appreciate everybody's coming. All the love you're showing here on the comments. That's fantastic. You can guarantee that we'll have Kirsten back. We're going to get more of this kind of stuff. I warned everybody, just want to say kind of like a month and a half ago, I warned you that we're going to do a lot of kind of like really hyper-local stuff, kind of like initially, especially leading up to the cool, so that we focus on school boards and then looking here at what's happening in Bucks County with Fitzpatrick. But I assure you, and I hope this came across here tonight, that the focus on Fitzpatrick isn't just a local issue, right? This is like legitimately one of these key races going into 2022 that could potentially, you know, like shift majorities, right, in the House. So it is an absolutely critical race. So appreciate it. Anyways, I want to remind you that you can tune in to us every Monday night. Next Monday is Labor Day, so I'm not quite sure what we're going to be doing for next week. I'll let you know about that. We'll be back here again on Friday. We're probably not going to do a traditional Wednesday show with Cyril. Cyril's still kind of doing a ton of work and trying to kind of catch up on a bunch of stuff. Looking to schedule, if you listened to last week's show, Steve Oros, who's the faculty member at Kutztown University, who basically they denied him an ADA request because he had a heart transplant. And his doctor said, you know what? Not a good idea to go back into like a pandemic when, especially if there's no vaccine requirements and his others. So yes, you can go back to work, but going back in person is not a good idea for you if you want to live. So he says, ask for the accommodation and they deny him, forcing him to decide whether or not he's going to kind of quit his job. Right. Or put himself at risk. So we're going to look to schedule that up with Steve coming forward. So that you might find that in your feed on Wednesday too as well. But for everything else, listen, everybody, you can help support this work that we're doing right here in Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/RC Press. Love to hear the feedback and want to give a super special shout out to everybody, you know, all throughout 2021 who've kind of joined in. A special thanks go to Steve and to Dan, who are our most recent patrons who jumped on and helped support this, making events like this tonight possible. So for the rest of you, listen, if you're got kids back going back to school, I'm with you. Everybody stay healthy out there. Make sure that you stay in the fight, but got to take care of each other. And what that, you know, means is kind of looking out and fighting the good fight. We'll see everybody. Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. See ya!